Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
A pair of off-Broadway shows to report on this week, both at well-respected venues with highly creative folks behind them, and they could hardly be more different. The first is a musical from the 30s, one that focuses on agitprop, a word we haven't heard for a while. The second features half a dozen performers sitting around a table and being asked their opinions. Well, you might say that's a form of agitprop, especially as things turn slightly testy. Anyway, let's start with The Cradle Will Rock, a title that may very well ring a bell. It was written by Mark Blitzstein, an American composer often compared to Kurt Weill, and takes place at a time and in a place where income equality is prominent and unionizing a new and legitimate threat. Welcome to Steeltown, USA. A man named Mr. Mister runs everything in this town. Who is this Mr. Mister? Asked one character. Better to ask what he is not, comes the reply. The revival is directed by John Doyle, the master of minimalism, and is playing at the Classic Stage Company in the East Village. Doyle, in fact, is the artistic director of Classic Stage now, and has presented a mixed bag of revivals, from Pacific Overtures to Carmen Jones to Tennessee Williams' Summer and Smoke, and he's had a mixed bag of success. The Cradle Will Rock comes right down the middle. In tattered costumes and on a bare set, a talented but not especially dazzling cast lets us know immediately times are tough in Steeltown. Doyle's stripped-down style would seem to fit the story perfectly, but somehow the action never quite comes to life. The show was originally considered a satire, but most elements of humor have been erased. Cradle is primarily sung through, and while the lyrics are a bit on the nose, they get the job done. Blitzstein's music is serviceable, but not particularly memorable. Four of the actors rotate at the lone piano. As for the storyline, well, no subtlety there. The characters have names like Reverend Salvation and Editor Daily. Some news can be made to order. The main catalyst is Larry Foreman, played by the best-known name in the cast, Tony Yazbek, whose goal is to rev up the workers until their demands are met. But concealed deadly leaflets don't quite make for enough of a sense of danger. Now, when many think of The Cradle Will Rock, they may be conjuring up a memory of the show's opening night in 1937. That's when the production sponsors suddenly pulled out. Director Orson Welles, who was 22 at the time, led the cast and the audience outside and in a parade down the street to a place that was available. Then the musicians and actor unions stepped in to try to halt the show. The end result was that the performers bought their own tickets and Blitzstein himself played the whole score on a piano. Yes, as often happens, the backstory is better than the final result. Still, this is not a painful 90 minutes, just a less than exhilarating experience. In these contentious times, mixing propaganda and entertainment might seem like the right combination, but this time around, well, the cradle doesn't quite rock. Now, on a very different note, when I think back on all the shows I've seen in the last few years, there is one that I think made me laugh more consistently than any other. It was a little one on a little stage called Miles for Mary. It came from a troupe called the Mad Ones and was done in conjunction with Playwrights Horizons. Well, now the Mad Ones are in residence at Ars Nova, the excellent and diverse company that has two homes. One is on Barrow Street in the West Village, where I saw its new offering called Mrs. Murray's Menagerie. This group really likes titles with multiple M's. Miles for Mary dealt with six people conducting a meeting. Sound exciting? No, but they were members of a school planning an annual fundraising campaign, and it resonated with just about anyone who has ever sat in endless boring meetings. Now, Mrs. Murray's Menagerie features some of the same performers sitting around a table, but this time they're members of a focus group. A roaming leader peppers them with questions about two children's television programs, including Mrs. Murray's Menagerie, which they have obviously just watched. raise your hand if you think Mrs. Murray is gentle all the time. At one point, they're asked to come up with a single word to describe a monstrous Muppet character. Misunderstood, comes a response. Every man is another. And we're talking about a puppet here. The only other character not sitting around the table is a poor guy who has to write all their answers on a chalkboard. Well, he definitely deserves an award for fastest, barely legible penmanship. There is some witty material here, especially as they dig into the two TV programs and their own parental leanings emerge. But what's potentially funniest is the bubbling hostility between the participants. Frankly, I think there could have been a lot more of that. The show is clever and the performances specific and first rate, but I wish there were a few more highs and lows or surprises along the way. It is directed by Lila Neugebauer, a sterling name in theater these days. It's not her best work, but the very fact that Ars Nova is attracting talent like that, well, it says a lot about its growing respect in the theatrical community. By the way, a show Ars Nova introduced a few seasons back called Underground Railroad Game was a powerful and highly successful piece about slavery. It's just been announced that the company is bringing that back in May to the Greenwich Village venue, by the way. It's a tough and inventive piece, so fasten your seatbelts before playing that game. And finally this week, FX starts a series about Bob Fosse and one of his wives, the legendary dancer Gwen Verdon. Lots of Tonys and drama between those two. It's pretty rare when television pays tribute to folks from the world of theater, besides the occasional live musicals, which may be getting less occasional, by the way. So it will be interesting to see if Fosse and Verdon, the show, conveys all that jazz in those two brilliant careers. A positive sign is that Lin-Manuel Miranda is one of the executive producers. And well, as we know, Jill, most everything he touches these days turns out pretty well.
All true. And interestingly, though, that was not always the case. I just feel that it is necessary to remind people that you gotta keep at it. And that is something he did extraordinarily well.
That's right. And Miranda, yeah.
No, it's odd out here in the big wide world where you see that a whole new group, and I don't think that the people who I'm about to name check, so to speak, have, I don't think they're representative of the whole group. I just think that they get themselves a little bit of media attention, and it appears that they don't understand the nuts and bolts and the, you know, chop wood, carry water nature of the whole thing. And that's the only reason I mentioned that, you know, for those of us of a certain age, we knew when when that particular person was out there, you know, banging on doors and scratching to get a break.
That's right. That's right. But more power to having, you know, to
absolutely.
What's their power to continue the love of theater and to put it on that? I don't know who else could get a show about Bob Fosse, frankly, on television. It would probably take somebody like Lin-Manuel Miranda at this point
to do that.
Probably do anything he wants.
Right. Now, just did was he part of the outfit that purchased the drama bookstore?
Yes, he was.
Okay.
Yes,
now that's just another little piece of things that people should understand. You know, once you've made it and you are giving back or you are shoring up the infrastructure for a bunch of other people, that is the, in my view, best possible example that
absolutely
you can set.
No, yeah, some people get, you know, very powerful and starstruck or whatever, and they kind of go into a hole. They do their work, but then they're not really about the keeping the entire thing going. And you got to say, Miranda, boy, I don't know. He made a lot of money on Hamilton, obviously, but he sees a bookstore that needs saving. There you go. He sees
right. And it's not just a random books. You know, it's all within the scope and purview of maintaining, again, the infrastructure of that community, because you can't do it without, if you can't go in and get the sides you need or buy the play, I don't care if you have an iPhone. I really don't, you know, sorry. a device.
That book was critical. And look what he did. You know, we're turning this into a Miranda thing, but look, look what he did when he went to Puerto Rico. I mean, did he have to do that? Did he have to go back to Puerto Rico? And he had to change his venue twice, you know, before they found a place. It sounds like the cradle will rock on opening night. Literally, they had to change, you know, where they were performing his Hamilton there. But, I mean, that was a tremendous ordeal. Not easy, but he did it to help his home country. So, God,
It's called giving back, I think, and it's an example. It's an example that should be, if not followed, then at least observed so that a percentage of people could follow it.
That's right.
Are you hearing anything about the, there's probably this is strictly broad, there's a crush of shows, right, opening?
There are a crush of shows.
To to come in under the Tony nomination wire?
Yes, Glenda Jackson just opened in King Lear. Which I haven't seen. It's supposed to be very long. I assume she's going to get the Tony. I mean, how does a woman play King Lear and not get the Tony? But I may be wrong. I have seen one that I'm going to talk about next week, and it has our two favorite people in it, Bill and Hillary. So if you're not tired of hearing about them, we'll talk about that one. It has got two pretty great actors itself. And what else? Kiss Me, Kate opened. What's the other big ones opening? Nathan Lane is opening in a weird one.
And then Roundabout's got Annette Bening and
yes, it does. Yes, I'm out of town right now, but that one I'm going to see when I get back. And Tracy Letts. They're doing All My Sons the same time that Sally Field is doing it in London. Why all of a sudden everybody's doing All My Sons at the same time? Who knows? But
It becomes somewhat timely, though, given the Boeing situation, no?
Yes, it does. Who knew, right? The other one I'm seeing when I get back is...
Yeah. Apparently. Excuse me.
Yeah, right. Is Burn This with... that has a pretty good cast with Kelly... I don't know what's her name. The one from The Americans. I'm blanking. Adam Driver is in Burn This, written by Lanford Wilson. So I'm going to be seeing that when I get back, and they're hoping for... obviously for acting nominations. So a lot of big performances with a lot of well-known names. And, you know, other ones winding down. Network is winding down.
How long did that go for? How long did that, I'm trying to
remember. About, I want to say 4 months.
Okay. And was it a limited run?
Oh, yeah. That could go forever. Okay. That could go forever. That's selling out almost every night, as is To Kill a Mockingbird. But, you know. You got some strong performances. You got Brian Cranston, Jeff, you know, the guy in To Kill a Mockingbird. And my brain is, you know, stopping here. But anyway, lots of really good performances. So I don't know. It's turned out to be a pretty interesting year. A lot of tough material, and you know, it's always there's always the hit and the miss. I say any season that has Nathan Lane. Bryan Cranston and Glenda Jackson can't be all bad.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.